Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
This episode is brought to you by La Quinta by Wyndham. Your work can take you all over the place, like Texas. You've never been, but it's going to be great because you're staying at La Quinta by Wyndham. Their free bright side breakfast will give you energy for the day ahead. And after, you can unwind using their free high-speed Wi-Fi. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book your stay today at LQ.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of But Why, the podcast that's all about digging into big questions and tricky topics via honest conversations. This week we're going to be looking at ADHD. Grace Timothy is a writer who has done stints with the likes of Vogue and Glamour and contributed to American Vogue, Sunday Times, Red, Stylist, Grazia, Marie Claire and Cilla, to name but a few. And her brilliant book, Lost in Motherhood, was published in 2018. That's blowing my mind a bit, actually. Where's those years gone? Which comedian Catherine Ryan said was hilarious and painfully honest, which it really was. It was one of the most kind of on-the-money accounts of parenting that I've ever read. It was absolutely brilliant. But that's not why we've got her here today. She's also about to launch her own podcast, and it's called Is It My ADHD? After a surprise diagnosis in 2021. Hello, Grace.
Hello, Clemmy, how are you?
I'm well, thanks. Actually, I'm a bit spun out. It's like half term. There's this weird storm. I don't really know what's going on.
I forgot. So you guys are on half term. We're supposed to start half term this weekend.
Oh.
And yeah, we got the text this morning to say, no, don't come in. Please don't come in. So that's that.
Oh, so half term's arrived early for you.
Yeah, it's a nice little surprise. The Simpsons is going to be on for about 24 hours, I think. And then we'll see what happens after that.
The one day when you thought you might just tie some stuff up before half term has now gone.
Absolutely. So there's no food. There's no tying of things. It's just crack on and see what happens.
I think, to be honest, though, after the last couple of years, anything's better than having them at home indefinitely. So
yeah, it's true. It is just a moment, isn't it? But I do think, like, she definitely has PTSD when it comes to Google Classroom. Oh, yeah. So the minute I was like, here we go, she was like,
No, can do. Oh, it makes us all shudder, doesn't it? I can't believe we lived through all that. So I always start with three, not that important, but quite fun questions. How are you really? What's your star sign? And what's your favourite crisp?
Oh, I love that. Okay, so how am I really? I really am okay. I really am okay because I've learnt to, like, half pandemic and half diagnosis, to literally take one day at a time and to sometimes take that day 1 hour at a time. And it's just leveled me out, not being quite so hectic and manic and thinking that everything has to be perfect and, like, I have to make up for what I have always felt were my shortcomings all the time, has just changed the game. So I am feeling good. And my favourite crisps... Oh, it's... No. Nope. I can't do it. It's too hard because crisps are my love. Do you know... Yeah, the one of the ones that I'm a bit obsessed with is the Co-op salt and it's like Chardonnay vinegar.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say them. I knew you.
Holy smokes.
They're a premium crisp. The problem is they're in the big bags too. You can't really have those because if you open them, that's like... It's like you end up detouring, don't you? Back to the crisps or I do...
It's true. And my husband has a really, I don't know if it's unattractive or attractive trait of adding a bag of Cadbury's caramel buttons to the bag of crisps.
What?
Oh my goodness. Yeah. It's a taste sensation, Clemmy.
Well, I just need to unpick this a bit more. So you eat the crisps, then you eat the chocolate, or you just go for a bit of both along the way?
I mean, I don't like to put both in my mouth at the same time. It's a sensory overload. But yeah, he does like to mix them. We are disgusting. But... It's a beautiful moment.
But I love the way that you said that as if it was one of those things that people just do. No.
Yeah. It's a Jamie Oliver, you're right. It's like, it's in a book somewhere, I'm sure. No, he's disgusting. I mean, he comes from the land of like deep frying Mars bars and stuff. So.
Okay. Yeah. So the bar's quite low. Wow. Mm-hmm. Well, I can't decide whether I want to try that or I really don't. But it's definitely I'm going to end up trying it because is it just with those or do you do it with more?
We haven't experimented, Clemmy, I'm going to be honest. You know, we're quite basic.
Well, if you find something you like, why change it up, especially when it's already quite out there?
Exactly.
Wow. And what star sign are you?
Leo. And I don't really know what that means at all, other than that I think most of the time it's quite unattractive things I read, so I try to ignore it.
No, I wouldn't say that. I mean, it means you're quite a big presence and, yeah, quite a force. And probably the thing that you most hate is anything that like damages your sense of pride. It being made a fool of wouldn't be very easy for you.
Except I've made like a business out of like oversharing. Maybe that's ADHD overruling the star sign qualities, maybe. But yeah, I don't mind at all.
No, but that's you in control of it.
Yeah, that's true. If someone undoes me, then maybe not. Yeah.
Yeah. So that might be like the ultimate coping strategy. You know, I'm gonna say everything and embarrass, but you know what I mean. Overshare it so that you can't come at me. Anyway. I did a whole episode on astrology, and I'm into it, but it was quite extreme. So I'm not going to like do another one on this because I think I might be losing people based on my astrology enough. So talk to me about what is a surprise ADHD diagnosis. How can it be a surprise, and how did it come about?
Well, I think talking now, as I do, to lots of women and non-binary people who have ADHD, it tends to be something that you've hunted down for a long time. Whereas I went for a routine hearing appointment with an audiologist, and he happened to have ADHD. So while I was sat there kind of tapping my feet and wiggling around and being a bit impatient about waiting and talking in every silence that kind of arose, he was like, have you ever been assessed for anything like on the neurodivergent spectrum? And I was like, no, like, what are you talking about? I'm like, no one's even mentioned that this might be a possibility. Now I'm thinking probably behind my back they did. And because I thought I was very self-aware and also quite tuned into sort of every possibility in terms of mental health concerns, I was very aware that I had anxiety. I've had pockets of depression, disordered eating as a teenager, OCD as a child, like lots and lots going on, but I knew about all of them. Do you know what I mean? I wasn't closed off. And also, physically, I go to the doctor quite regularly, shall we say? And over the last couple of years, thank God, had CBT and sort of tackled that side of things. But what it meant was, I'm very aware of, from like how my digestive system is sensitive to some things to, that my hearing's not great. So I've been really on it with my physical and mental health. So I was really surprised and actually completely dismissed it, and then went home and obviously being a journalist, like did a deep dive into what ADHD really is and was like, holy crap. Yeah, that is like, I could literally pick out every year of my life and be like, it was steering me in some way. From like really nice things that I think, like I'm very ambitious and I have like a certain amount of fearlessness, and those kind of things have been really helpful, to the really unhelpful stuff. And things like anxiety and depression are massively tied in with ADHD. So they're considered comorbidities, and you very rarely have, ADHD without one of those.
Oh, is that true?
Yeah. So, not that everybody with ADHD has those things, but they're incredibly common, particularly with women. And obviously late diagnosis as well means that you've gone through your life trying to compensate often, or trying to mask. And obviously there's going to be a fallout to that. So yeah, it was a big surprise. But once this audiologist then sent my GP lots of information. He was so kind, because actually it wasn't his bag at all. He didn't need to do anything, but he obviously saw the struggle was real. And she knew nothing about ADHD as well, and was like, this is a bit of a curveball, but I'm really happy to investigate it for you. And then, I found out that the wait for an assessment would be between 4 and 7 years.
Mm.
So I saved up and found a brilliant psychiatrist, had an assessment. And he was like, before we'd even begun, he was like, yeah. I mean, this is quite obvious. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that was that. And I mean, I've gone through so many phases of being like, I'm not going to engage and connect with it too much, because I just want to be who I am and carry on and not be directed by it. And then just being like, this just explains everything. And it makes me feel so much better understanding myself. So yeah, it's been a ride and a half.
I'm sitting here nodding because I don't know if I said on email, but my husband's just been diagnosed with ADHD. And that came about from me putting a post up on Mother of All Lists and like from somebody about ADHD diagnosis. And I'm like formatting it, reading it. I'm like, all right. I mean, this is Ben, and exactly the same. By the time he went to the psychiatrist, it's It's just like, oh yeah, this is so obvious. And but it's a weird thing to wrangle because it, as you say, at first you go okay, that's just that, and then you go back through so much, through your education, through your relationships, through, you know, your daily habits, and it's not to kind of, I don't want to use the word excuse, it doesn't change anything, but it just gives you a lens to understand yourself through.
Yeah,
it,
completely.
It?
Yeah, yeah. And I think there's a little bit of that thing of like picking out what's my personality and what's the symptom.
Yes.
And actually, I think I've got to a point where I'm like, you know, I am who I am. It doesn't really matter why that's happening. But it does mean that if there's stuff that's challenging and difficult, I can at least understand and work out a way to cope better.
And I think the problem is that we have a vision. You know, I'm thinking back to growing up, I'm dyslexic, and that I got diagnosed in and ADHD and dyslexia often come hand in hand, don't they? But I got diagnosed, you know, by the time I was about 18, because that's when that was beginning to bubble up. But I had very little understanding of ADHD at school. And then later on, if I understood it, you have a very particular view of a very disruptive child, which again feels like awful language. But that you just didn't... I didn't know about it in adults. And you only had a very specific version of it.
Well, I think as an adult, when I tell people as well, there's still that misconception. And a lot of people were like, oh, no, short, really? Because like, you've got your shiz together. And actually, like, that's, I know that they mean that as a compliment, but it's like, oh, you don't know what is going on underneath. And actually, I don't have my stuff together at all. But also, it's about the research, and the clinical picture is 100% based on white, cisgender, male case studies. I'm often quite young, so yeah, under 16. And so of course that stereotype exists. And unfortunately, it exists amongst the health community and the educational settings as well. So it's there's so much to overcome to even for it to be a consideration. And I mean, I learnt more in sort of a couple of weeks of investigating it than I think my GP had learnt, because, and not through no fault of her own, she's an amazing person, but like, it's just not on any curriculums. Even as a psychiatrist, you don't have to know about ADHD. It's like almost like a sort of, you can dip in and out of that. There's no accreditation for it as a specialism, so there's a complete lack of specialists across the country. And obviously with COVID and all the other disruptions to, you know, NHS funding and everything, that's just sort of got worse and worse rather than starting to improve. So it's kind of up to a lot of us to hopefully spread the word about what it can look like, so that women and non-binary people can self-advocate and have like the right words.
And I think, I'm wondering as you're talking, whether that's because, I don't know if there's such a thing as high functioning ADHD, but actually I always say in relation to Ben, his energy levels and his ability to keep going because of it, a kind of what everybody wants these days, you know, that always on go, works very well in kind of modern society. And then if I have read something where you said, you know, you're not super disorganized, which is often a trait, but actually you've probably just worked extremely hard to put systems in place to do that. And then of course that shows up in anxiety, because in order not to lose your keys, I'm projecting here, but you know, you're having to go 10 to the dozen. And then I'm wondering often whether it goes the other way, where people begin to self-medicate, whether, you know, a lot of the people who are drinking or smoking are doing so to compensate for their neurodiverse brains, but it all gets hidden because my understanding of a lot of ADHD people do really well because they're the party animals in your 20s and 30s, really, really fun. And then when everyone begins not to want to party so much, you're still chomping at the bit, and it's like, well, that, you know, these are massive sweeping generalizations, but you know what I mean, it can be really well masked for big chunks of your life.
Yeah, so true. And I think the thing is that, so first of all, like, talking about functioning and low functioning and all that kind of thing is really, really tricky, because that can set someone back in terms of, you know, so for example, in my diagnosis, he said, you've got a severe impairment, across all of these. And I was like, that makes me feel, but I'm coping. Like, I pay my mortgage. I have a functioning relationship, thank goodness, mainly due to his patients. You know, I'm a parent. I've got a job. I haven't been fired. All those things. And he was like, it's not about that. And it's not about how you're, and I put quote marks, like, functioning. It's about how you've managed those things and how we can help you better manage them. So, I mean, yeah, I definitely had some behaviours that I wish I'd maybe not had at certain times. And then on the other hand, I also had an amazing time as a teenager in particular. I was out every single night, and luckily, and I think this has a lot to do with my whiteness, you know, the privilege that I was born into, all of those things, I didn't get into huge amounts of trouble. Mm-hmm. And every time I veered towards, you know, that maybe being something a bit more red flaggy, mm-hmm. I was kept back and I was supported through that. Mm. So I think I'm really lucky. But when I look at the stats, you know, you're 18 times more likely to be convicted of a crime if you've got ADHD. Wow. I know you're a woman. And bearing in mind also with a lot of these stats, non-binary doesn't always figure in the research because they just haven't got there yet. So, I mean, I feel like it's enough at the moment that we have even women being studied. Like that's already deficient in so many ways. It's such a shame. So hopefully moving forward, there'll be more kind of diverse research as well. But yeah, I mean, you're far more likely to divorce, to present with teenage pregnancy, to be the subject of domestic violence and violence from a sexual partner, sexual exploitation. Like there are so many problem areas. And if your ADHD is severe, then your life expectancy can be reduced by 12.7 years. So, I mean, it's huge because of accidents, suicide, you know, there are so many foibles. So while it feels like, oh, do you know what? It's fueled me to be badass across many sort of areas of my life. However, I am so, so fortunate. And I think when we talk about, again, quote marks functioning, because a lot of people really don't like to use that language. It's for me and looking at other people I know who have ADHD, it's massively the support system that I was lucky enough to be born into, and my whiteness, like I said, and all the other kind of intersections of privilege that I've been born into, that's kept me where I am. And I'm very aware of my husband's role in this. We've been together since I was like 19, 20. And I think he has been like almost like a care worker for me in so many phases where ADHD was getting really bad and my behaviours were erratic and all that kind of thing. So yeah, I think I've just been really lucky, and there are so many people who aren't as lucky.
Yeah, I'm nodding because it's difficult. I'm obviously on the other shoe on, you know, the other side of that experience, and it is that there. And I don't think Ben would mind me saying there are times when it feels like a very parent-child relationship, which is difficult. And again, but at least now with the diagnosis, I have a better understanding of that, because it's very hard to go, why can't you do, you know, have better time management, better, you know, executive functioning skills, because if those aren't challenging to you, they feel relatively obvious, and you know, he could never put words to it. And yeah, it's very difficult, but it, again, it's very, because it's one of those conditions perhaps that is thrown around without people understanding what it is, it's difficult, as we say, can really, really have huge impacts, can't it?
Yeah, and I think the thing is as well, there's a stigma attached to it, which is attached to that child who's very disruptive and kind of throwing chairs at the teacher and stuff. And actually the majority, well, I don't know very much about male ADHD actually, but the majority of women seek to internalise those feelings, those impulses and things. So actually we fight against the impulse to be that child. I definitely had something in me that was like, I want to run around and I want to leave the classroom and I want to do this, but I didn't do it because I knew to be a girl and to be liked and accepted, you have to make yourself small. Yeah, you have to be quiet, you have to be still. So actually, I mean, ADHD is a massive issue with female gender conformity as well, and the kind of societal expectations placed on us. It bucks against all of those. So that's, you know, that's a real problem. So not only are you battling the kind of neurotypical standards, but you're also battling the standards of being an acceptable, attractive, likeable woman.
Is easier for a boy to wriggle around in that space, quite literally, isn't it? But yeah, that's an exhaust. So no wonder it has impact on your mental health, because you're working so hard to try and just to conform, which is is wild, isn't it? So are you seeing, when through your podcast, you're speaking, did you say, to women and non-binary?
Yeah,
and are you seeing commonalities in people's journeys?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'm seeing such a diversity between everybody. Like, it's crazy how different it presents in each person. But there is this constant throughout all the people I've spoken to, whether they were diagnosed early on or late, most of them were late, that they have masked and that their true self hasn't come out until they've had a diagnosis and have been able to process and work through that diagnosis. you know, medication quite often has been the thing that's made them realize what life could be like. But I think that's the main thing, is this sense of just being other and not understanding why. And particularly like me, I'm white, cishet, you know, so I suppose middle classy. And I just knew that I was different, but I couldn't, like you say, I couldn't put a word to it.
That's
exactly. Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what it's about, is about empowering people to have that language and advocate for themselves and be very aware that women also aren't listened to in the same way. We know this from so much research, that in healthcare settings, you know, you have to fight that little bit harder, and you have to be so articulate about what it is that's going on. And that's a trait of ADHD, is that you struggle with that. So, yeah, it's difficult. And I think that the issues around the healthcare provisions as well has been so prevalent throughout the podcast series. Like, everybody has struggled, whether they've had the, you know, finances to go private or not. The costs are prohibitive. They're so expensive. So like, I got diagnosed, but I then couldn't continue with treatment because it was crazy expensive. So I'm in this one sense no better off, because I haven't been able to access any of the kind of support. But on the other hand, you know, I'm doing my own thing that I've been doing for 38 years now.
Yeah, and it's worked. You know, you're holding it together. Yeah, ish. Within. Yeah, I mean, it is the process is mad, isn't it? And you know, there's no shade on anything on the NHS, because we know.
No.
But it's impossible to access if you couldn't do it privately. 7 years. I mean, 7 years is an insane amount of life, isn't it?
Yeah.
But also, I think the irony of it, and again, I compare it to it being dyslexic, where I would struggle with some of the forms and stuff. The actual process of having to piece together a diagnosis and then sort out the medication is actually quite challenging for an ADHD mind, I think, or could be. And this is the irony, isn't it? When you most need help, yeah, it feels like an unfathomable process, a bit like a mental health crisis, to be honest.
Yeah. I think that it's you know, when I've had depression, it's very difficult to have the energy even to go, right, I need to chase help. My GP, I need to do this. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Or just ask even like your mum or, you know, your partner or whatever. So yeah, there's definitely that. Basically, ADHD is about a lack of regulation and a lack of filter. So it's not that you're not aware of everything that's going on, or that person's looking at you going like, what is she on? It's that you just can't do anything about it, and you can't find a way to regulate and to, I mean, I hate to use the word normal, but to normalise. It's very, very, very difficult, very difficult. And I think medication is so key to that. I've seen so many of my friends just like blossom.
Really?
Yeah, it makes an incredible impact. And I think, I mean, I was talking to my psychiatrist. As soon as he said, right, I'm going to prescribe this, I was like, no, God, no, I'm not going to touch meds, because you're going to take away my creativity and any energy that I have and stuff. And he was like, no, that's not what it is. It's about like focusing that energy where it needs to be focused, and leveling things out.
Am I right in saying that with the ADHD medication, you can, it's not like it needs to build up in your system. I understood that you could take it Monday to Friday, for argument's sake, and then not take it the weekend. It's a bit like putting your contact lenses in or not, you know, it's like, which is a very different way of thinking about a medication. Now, if you were on holiday and you want to be full throttle you, then you have the option not to.
Completely. I mean, there's lots of nuances. Obviously, it depends on like the dosage and stuff, as to if you can just drop it automatically, or whether you'll get, just because I think you get a bit of a hit on your metabolism stuff of just like, oh God, I'm knackered suddenly having, you know, been fine all week. But yeah, you can come on and off as and when you want to. And I think some people get to the point where they're using it literally for like, I'm going into the office for a day. I know I'm going to need that focus, but I'll be fine tomorrow. And I think that's, I mean, what a godsend. That's amazing.
Yeah.
But it's just super, super difficult to get on the NHS, because they tend to be controlled substances. So they can only be prescribed by a psychiatrist. And obviously to do that, you have to be under psychiatrist care, which means going on another caseload, which is just, it's just like barrier, barrier, barrier.
Yeah.
And then obviously it's super expensive if you do it privately. So yeah, it's difficult. So I've got to learn to do stuff that isn't meds for now. And then maybe, you know, one day things will change.
What kind of things do you find helps you?
Oh. You know, the crisps with the chocolate. No.
Yeah, that seems like a very good place to start.
Yeah. I mean, it's not like it's riddled with sugar. And
yes.
Terrible, terrible idea. I think I want to say mindfulness, but not in the sense of mindfulness as a practice, but more I'm mindful of the alcohol that I drink, the caffeine that I take, the I'm mindful of my week. So if I'm really, really, really lucky to be able to work in an office setting part time, so I know that maybe after a day in the office, I need to then work from home and just like have some alone time. I'm very aware now of how I parent and the energy that I need to do that. And sometimes I need to step away for a minute, and you know, that's okay. So yeah, I'd say it's being more mindful about how I live and what I take in. Yeah.
Do you find that your cycle, like your hormones, have an impact on how you are?
Yeah, but it's I haven't quite worked out yet how. I need to keep a diary, basically, and that's again one of my worst. Like, I just can't commit to things like that at all, like planners and journals and stuff. I find difficult. But yes, it absolutely does. And actually, talking to women through the podcast, things like perimenopause and pregnancy. I mean, when I look through when my ADHD has been at its worst, it's been when I've had that initial hormone surge as an 8 to 10 year old. It's been going on the pill. It's been pregnancy, you know, it's definitely tied in 100%. And I think, again, the research is growing in that area, but it's still, you know, it's like our brains are probably only second in importance to our vaginas in terms of health research. You know, who kind of cares?
My friend always says that PMT stands for permanent megatruth. And I always wonder whether actually when those bits when we're like, oh, hormonal, it's when we can no longer keep and peripatetic. To be honest, all those points, when you can't kind of keep up the facade anymore, it's just like, oh, fuck it. This actually, I am actually really cross with you, or I am feeling this and I am overwhelmed and I can't play the nice girl card anymore. Mm-hmm. And I do wonder whether that actually is what happened. It's just like, you can no longer hide behind everything you've been trying so hard to front.
I need to write that down. That's such an insight, Clemmie, because like, that's 100% like, you get different challenges to your masking. And I think like if you're drunk, for example, like obviously the ability to mask like kind of drops away a bit, which means you're super fun most of the time, or you're a complete nightmare. But yeah, 100% PMT is real. And but again, it's about picking out how much of this is like the hormones making me feel really sad. Like my emotional regulation is not great. It's better now I'm older actually, but I'm very quick to cry. You know, not necessarily.
I read that that can be a key symptom of ADHD in women, like quick to cry.
Yeah. But then also like being a woman in the 21st century and having your period and having all the challenges that we, you know, is it any wonder that we want to cry a lot of the time? It's difficult to know. But yeah, emotional lability is one of the things that experts are trying to introduce to the criteria for diagnosis, because actually that's one of the most damaging to a woman's life, is that emotional ability, because obviously that affects relationships, even like your kind of behavior in the workplace, parenting, you know, that's the stuff that's difficult to live with.
Yeah. And but then it's also, as you say, like about, oh, you don't want to cry, but actually the crying is also really useful for your body to regulate itself. And it's only if we feel fearful of a woman crying that she's losing it or that she's mad. So often I just had a bit of a cry in the middle of the afternoon, nothing more to it, no one needed to help me, or nothing was particularly wrong. I was a bit hormonal, a bit knackered, had a cry and felt so much better. So it's like the things that we've layered onto that is a terrible faux pas for a girl to be, or anyone to be, bursting into tears. But crying is just another expression of emotion, isn't it?
Oh, completely. And I think that's the thing with ADHD, is that you don't have the filter necessarily to know when those behaviours are appropriate. And I'm a bit like, but who said that those behaviours weren't appropriate? That's like, again, it's like society, it's the patriarchy, it's capitalism, it's all those things have fed into this ideal. And actually, you know, when you look at the people who are talking about dismantling those things, it's quite often a neurodiverse person, neurodivergent person. So there is that sense of like, actually, maybe we can be making a really meaningful contribution with that lack of filter and that sort of fearlessness and just lack of ability sometimes to mask. I think that's really important.
Yeah.
But also it just, I mean, it's, and I'm really ashamed to say it, but I didn't know quite how debilitating the just society can be until I realised it was one of the things that was impacting my mental health and as a person with ADHD. And I wish I'd known sooner and been more of an advocate and more of an ally. But like, it's just crazy when you look at the way that society is formed to completely make those things that actually are really great about us into kind of flaws.
Yeah. And also, we're not talking about the tiny niches of society. These are you know, when you begin to go, yeah, might you have autism or dyslexia or ADHD or any of these things, you're like, oh, I've wriggled through my friendship group or the people that I, you know, spend my time with. It's like, yeah, probably, yeah. And you're all achieving wonderful things, but mainly actually now as I head towards my, you know, late 30s, 40s, because they've managed to shape their lives to perhaps hopefully to that neurodiversity. But if you hadn't, it could be a really, really tough existence, couldn't it?
Well, and I think it's really important to acknowledge as well that when we like see people in magazines that have ADHD and on telly and in podcasts and all that kind of thing, that, you know, it is the people who have like channeled it somehow and have achieved things that are sort of noteworthy or whatever, or, you know, people think are noteworthy. But actually there are, you know, I think something like 26% of women in prison have ADHD. You don't hear those stories so often. You know, there's, it's just, it is a problem for sure. I don't like to say disorder or deficiency or any of those things, because actually, it's definitely a challenge. And I think that the challenge isn't down to the neurodevelopmental issue. It's down to the structure around that person, unfortunately. I mean, like Silicon Valley is making amazing use of people with autism and ADHD, because actually, I mean, it's, there are superpowers. That again is such a cliche term, and it's so difficult, but there are powers.
Yeah, we have to remember the real positives. Again, it's not exactly the same, but if you gave me the choice to get rid of being dyslexic tomorrow, I wouldn't take it. You know, it's a gift for the good parts of it. And I'm sure, with ADHD and autism, that is exactly the same if you can find your place in the world.
Yeah, I think that when we were talking about doing the podcast, I was looking at podcasts, basically, and there were lots of kind of entrepreneurs talking about how ADHD can be so helpful. And there was lots of things about parenting children with ADHD. Mm-hmm. But I was like, what about just, I'm just a woman. Like, I want to sit still and not bitch at people when I'm waiting for the bus. I want to, like, be able to support my child in her difficult emotional moments without having a challenge myself. Like, I just want to be like a better friend and a better wife and a better mother and all those things. And actually that stuff's not out there. And even if that's just hearing that someone else has the same challenges as you and you're not an arsehole, that's enough sometimes to make you be like, oh, okay, right, here we go.
That's it, isn't it? Just to, that it's not a comment on you as a person, that you have to navigate things in this way. Do you think you have found aspects of parenting particularly challenging as a result?
Yeah, I think because I have a really fixed idea of how I want to be a parent, and I read all the books and all that kind of stuff. And it was really interesting, actually, because there were lots of comments when I first had my daughter about how much I was reading into it. And it's because, and like kind of that scoffing of like, oh, you wait, you won't, you know, the books won't help you when you're in the sort of trenches of it. And it was the only way that I knew, my brain knew how to prepare and feel like I had some control, was to research and try and understand things. And actually what happens is I'm not able to necessarily draw on those wisdoms in the moment, because there are lots of kind of behaviours that I find really triggering. And now I'm able to acknowledge that. Hopefully it's not too late and I'm able to kind of wrestle back that compassion that I want to constantly have. But sometimes I have had to just be like, darling, I need to walk away for a minute, because if it's a tantrum, for example, I it's not that I'll ever get really, really angry, and there's not like anything explosive, and I don't tantrum myself, but it's just I'll like cry, or
your brain fries, basically.
Yeah, and I can't use like the good tactics that I know that I should use, or strategies. For some reason, they just don't come to me. I'm just stood there like crying, or, you know, whatever. And I don't want that for her. I want her to, you know, I want her to have the best. Of course I do. And yeah, I've just found that my patience is, what's the word? I suppose erratic a little bit. Sometimes it's not regulated. So sometimes I can be really chill and be really proud of the way I've parented. And then there are the odd occasion where I think, oh, I wish I had just remembered those amazing words that you're supposed to do in terms of like gentle parenting and all of that stuff, rather than just being like, ah, I can't take this. I have to leave the room. I can't take any more whining or screaming or whatever it is, you know?
But I mean, also that is just parenting, isn't it? We all 100%. Hope that we could be the parent we had in our heads, but it's so much harder than that. It's so much harder than that. Yeah. And this is me trying to like tell myself it's okay. It's been a mad couple of years. hasn't it? You know, even I've just been realising we've just actually spent too much time with them, these
yeah,
kids.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that's not that I don't want to spend all the time in the world with them, but you've got no let up. And in order to regulate yourself through your hormones and as a person, you need to, and they need to, actually, it works two ways. I 100%. Really definitely think my kids want to be away from me somewhere. And you just basically have got to the point you wind each other up the wrong way.
Yeah. I mean, I think also my daughter is an only child as well. And I was an only child, really. I had step siblings, but we didn't all live together. And I notice a lot with her, you know, she's stuck in this kind of love triangle with my husband and I. And actually, sometimes she needs someone to be like, oh, they can be real arseholes sometimes. Don't worry about it. Like, do you know what I mean? And she needs to, she doesn't have a sibling to do that. So she needs to be with her friends. And like you say, to learn to regulate outside of us constantly being like, I don't know, like a safe space for her to tantrum or whatever. She needs to actually have other people to tell her, like, no, not having that kind of thing.
And also, I think what you're modelling, and again, this is me trying to tell myself I'm okay, that if I have lost it and not behaved in the way that, not parented in the way that I like, which is frequent, being able to come back into the room and acknowledge that, and you know, I think is also, you know, it doesn't make it okay, but they are really great lessons to say, you know, mummy is complicated and emotional and trying my best and like knowing when to, yeah, acknowledge that in yourself, I think hopefully teaches them well.
I really hope so. Yeah, there's a lot of, you know, we've always made sure that we apologise and talk about something and be like, this is where we messed up. And I think also we've talked about ADHD a lot. And I'm sure there are some people who would say like maybe, you know, she knows too much in terms of like maybe she doesn't need to know it at all. But I like the idea that she understands the difference in brains and the difference in approaches. Like my husband and I are so different. He, you know, doesn't display any kind of sign of any neurodivergence at all.
Doesn't
and
he?
Is incredibly relaxed and very, very laid back. And it's all chill.
Oh, lucky
I
him.
Mean, thank goodness. I know. I hate him a little bit. And I think it's important for her to understand that. And also because she's, I mean, I don't know if she'll display any ADHD at some point because it is supposed to be genetic through the mother's side. But I think there's still a lot of research to be done on that as well. But yeah, there is a link. But in terms of her cohort at school and when she goes to secondary school, like I want her to be not even tolerant, but like supportive and loving towards those people and understand that there's difference. And I think, rather than when we were kids where it was like, oh, that kid's a real pain in the arse, really difficult, like going to get excluded kind of thing. Like that, you know, I'd love for her to have that kind of awareness, yeah.
Yeah, she definitely, yeah, you can only hope that they will. You just don't know.
No, let's hope we know nothing.
But again, around the crying thing, it's something I'm sure, you know, as I say, I'm emotional. My kids see me cry quite a lot and I really want them to know that's nothing to be scared of. There's something bad happening. It's just a thing. And as such, yeah, that, I think they're really good life. They're good tools for going in. And the same if you've got a child that is emotional in the classroom. Because there's nothing worse than if you are emotional, of like laddering guilt and shame and embarrassment on top of that.
100%. And I think that's another thing with ADHD is, though, that your self-esteem has been chipped away for so many years. Yeah, so when it comes to my parenting, those books and things that I read were like security blankets and some sort of like support for myself to make me think that I could be better than I thought I was, if you know what I mean. And because I knew she deserved better than who I thought I was. And I think so in terms of like owning your emotions and all that stuff, it's just harder because you think, oh no, but this is me being an arsehole and I, you know, I don't want her to think that I'm that person. I want her to trust me and feel, you know, completely and utterly safe and all that stuff. So there's just a lot. There's so many layers going on.
That self-esteem thing is really interesting, isn't it? Because you can be experiencing quite low self-esteem, but there's some of the traits of ADHD can make it appear like you're uber confident or you're you know, quite willingly taking up space in a conversation and in a room, and then it's like this self-fulfilling thing. Do you think that if you know, you have early diagnosis and a support network, that there's a way of it not damaging your self-esteem?
Yeah, I don't actually know the science behind, because obviously it's a neurodevelopmental condition, so it's not like environmental necessarily. It's, you know, it's in your brain. So there are some things that you just presumably can't undo. But I think in terms of the self-esteem, yeah, for me, I can see where it started to fail. So when I was kind of before I was eight, basically, I was at a very chill primary school, like little village school, no academic pressure whatsoever. And I remember now, like, wandering around the corridors, like, there was no kind of sit down and behave, and I just never had those kind of teachers. And I was so happy. I was definitely what I think other kids would have thought of as weird, but for some reason it worked, and I was class clown and all that stuff, and it was all okay. And also my parents were in showbiz, so we were all kind of thought to be a bit eccentric anyway. And so I did, yeah, obviously no one was like neurodivergence. And then when I went to my next school was when everything changed, and I developed OCD like overnight, and lots of anxiety kind of related issues and eating disorders and all that kind of thing, because it was a sit down from 8:30 till 4:30. It was a really academic prep school I only lasted for like 18 months. And it was no good. So I think, looking back, that in the early days, you know, my kind of creativity and everything was really, really pushed and supported. And then it was only when that was sort of stamped out that it was like, oh God, this is, you know, this is painful. So yeah, I do think that. And I think, I mean, it's even simple things like exercise and sport, I never got into. Like, I hate exercise, and I still haven't got the right attitude at all about it. And I spoke to this amazing psychologist called Dr. Jo Steer, who's written a book about women and ADHD. And she was saying that if a coach, for example, like a netball or a football coach, if they understand that they need to deliver instructions and check in with that person rather than just be like, okay, class, this is what we're doing, go. Which is, for an ADHD brain, it's like, oh, what? I don't know. I can't follow instructions, and my body doesn't work in the way I think it's going to, and I'm clumsy and all those things. Then it's about empowering that child in a slightly different way. You can completely sidestep all of those issues that have developed in people like me. I mean, Natalie, I know that Natalie Lee is like a mutual friend. She talks about how dance, like, she struggles. She finds it really hard, but it helps that connection between her body and her brain. And having always felt like her body, you know, that I think she's sort of the same as me, like clumsiness, couldn't follow instructions, all that kind of stuff. She suddenly was like, if I have someone who wants me to do well and I feel supported and I can take the time to follow and maybe to have a bit of extra time to everyone else, I'm like, I'm there with everyone else. Yeah. And it feels amazing.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think there's elements of self-esteem that presumably might be part of the condition. Yeah. And then I think there's others that are completely societal and...
I'm really interested to know whether those challenges with sport and exercise, again, are more common in female ADHD or whether it runs across both. But as you're saying, it's to do with the people that you get in touch with. If you know, I know who Nat's dance teacher is, and if you've got someone who's willing to stand by your side, and then, you know, as we both know, Nat, once she's into something, she's going to give it her all.
Yeah.
But it's that sticking point, isn't it, of holding my hand, saying the same instructions over and over again until I get it, and then I'm golden.
I think you also have a window maybe with things, like if I don't nail something straight away, then I'm just not interested unless someone pushes me and pays attention and really sees like where I'm falling down.
I think
it's just about that. And I think there's lots of children who require that who aren't neurodivergent. It's just about being more supportive.
Kindness.
It's just kindness. Yeah, completely.
Yeah, and the problem is with sport, I was, you know, the classic case, didn't do sport at school, hated PE, and actually as an adult, I'm really, really into fitness, but it's because I didn't have anyone who helped me through the being not very good at it and who made me feel that if you weren't good at it, you shouldn't do it. That's been a real switch for me. You don't have to be good at your hobbies. You can do stuff because it's fun and it makes your body feel good.
Yeah, so true.
But yeah, if you're not a sporty person, you can often fall out of that. But we all need to move. We all need to move our bodies.
Yeah. Well, and I think if you look at some of the like most famous athletes, like Simone Biles, Michael Phelps as a swimmer, like they are all ADHD. Because actually, if you hit it right and you get that interest and hyper-focus, then you can, you know, the world's your oyster. You can be incredible. There are so many professional athletes who have ADHD.
Yeah, because of the hyperfocus.
Yeah. And actually, if I had latched onto something as a child, it would have been a different story probably. Although I can't see myself as a gymnast at all. But you never know.
It might, you know, don't you always think, oh, any minute now I'm going to find it. The thing's going to happen. It's going to be like, I'm going to be amazing. But with your work, you know, you've written a book and you write for your job. So that involves, in my mind, an awful lot of focus and a lot of being, you know, you have found your thing there. Do you experience the hyper-focus thing or...
Yeah, I love it. Yeah. It's so...
because superpower.
Yeah, completely. And it's, I mean, like, it's probably not very healthy long term, but like, it gets to the point where I haven't peed for like 12 hours
or eaten
or anything. Yeah. And it's not, I'm not like at all championing not having an appetite or anything. I love eating, but it's just that focus is so keen, and you can be incredibly quick and efficient. And if you're working with the right people, you know, it's amazing. And I'm so grateful for that, actually. But yeah, I mean, equally, I've tried to write 2 fiction books since my last book came out. So that's like 4 years ago. It's just not happening. It's not happening. And I think I understand maybe a little bit more of why that is now. I don't have the passion, maybe, or whatever it is yet. I haven't clicked on the right idea that makes me go like, oh, yes, like I can bash this out in 3 months.
So it's having faith in yourself that that will come around, and it will, you know, you've got a whole career of writing behind you, so you know you can write. And it was, yeah, if it's really hard, isn't it? Again, society, and I did a podcast yesterday on burnout. We told us we must grind and grind and grind and grind. And of course we have to work, and of course we have to do what we do to feed our children, et cetera, et cetera. But there is often, if something is really, really not coming easy, there's a really good reason for it. And just taking that grip off it and going, okay, breathe it out. And actually, you might come back to those fiction books with the right golden thread through it, and it will happen. But yeah, we just stick at stuff sometimes, don't we?
Yeah, I think we're just taught to, aren't we? We're taught never to quit and never give up. Actually, yeah. Another thing about ADHD is that you are more likely to quit your job. And I've done that so many times, and I'm so, so lucky that it's like served me well, being able to quit and saying like, I just don't, I'm not getting this. I don't like it anymore. Or after 2 years, I still haven't perfected that thing. Like, I worked in a magazine. One of my first jobs in a magazine was a bit more admin led than writing at the beginning. And the writing side was fine and probably quicker than a lot of people. But the admin side, I was a disaster. And 2 years in, I was thinking, but I don't understand. I'm trying so hard. I've got all these strategies in place and I'm still making the same mistakes. And I don't understand why. I must be an idiot. And that's why I would quite often quit a job and be like, right, move on. Or I'd get bored. That happened a lot. But I'm really lucky that that served me and that I always had something else to go to, which I think is important. And the fearlessness played into that a lot. So I would go, right, I'm gonna go to New York and I'm going to meet the editors there, and I'm just gonna be like, I could write for you from London. And you know, that I remember my husband being are you really just do you know any of them, or are you gonna like ring them beforehand or whatever? And I was just like, it'll be fine, and if it's not fine, that's okay too, like it's all right. And I genuinely think it's just not having that filter that someone else would have.
But isn't that, you know, hopefully if we can all find a place for this, there is a person who loves the admin, who likes the structure, who wants to do the same thing for the next 15 years of their life because that brings them utter joy. And we need the fearless people who will go and leap forward. And it's just like, if we all stop trying to force ourselves into these boxes and be our most ourselves, I really think this can 100%. Be happier.
I think the thing,
and avoid, yeah, go on.
No, I was just gonna say, the only problem is things like car tax and stuff that we all kind of need to do. That stuff is, but I just, you know, I have to now set reminders on my phone. I write notes in my diary when things like that are coming up, and you know, birthdays I forget all the time. And it's not a lack of love or attention, it's literally my brain doesn't retain a lot of information. My psychiatrist said it's a bit like if you are working on a document and you shut down without saving, it just, you can't then recall that information. And I think that's really common with us. And there are some things that you have to do that you have to work out a strategy. I mean, I definitely, between you, me, and all the podcast listeners, definitely drove around like without an MOT for a while at one point, because I just had no sense of it, no concept, you know. And a lot of people would go, well, you're a complete dickhead, that's really stupid. And
but it wasn't,
And now I understand that no matter how organised I am, that stuff will happen and I have to be so on top of it.
Yeah, and like, force, if there's one thing you have to lean into at the top of your list every day, is that really arduous admin.
Yeah.
Knowing that you're going to have the energy to go through. Yeah, I mean, I can't tell you how much of a bane of our life parking tickets are.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, completely.
And it's like, again, you say that mildly, but if you've lived through it on either side of it, these ladder up to, you know, it's always the small things that end up turning into bigger things, don't they? Because it's, yeah, that's how life works. But you're right. We can't opt out of some boring bits of admin, but I guess it's just remembering for yourself that that's the bit that is hard. And
that's it, because I didn't even realize that. I thought, oh, there's just some things that I forget, and like, you know, it's a roller coaster. And then Rich would be like, my husband would be like, I mean, yeah, but do you think, like, can we put some things in place so that you don't do that again? Like, yeah, you know, a parking ticket is so expensive. Like, you can't sustain that. So let's just really try and think about how we can help you with that, rather than being like, oh my God, you're such a dickhead and you've got no common sense. Do you know what I mean? Like, that definitely, he could have said that.
Yeah. And I wonder whether, again, this is like for my own personal interest. Mm. The thing is, I think with Ben, when he is getting better at doing things like that, I try and in a non-patronising way, like, positively affirm that back to him. Because if you've had these things have become quite triggering, and you send you, it goes further into this kind of self-esteem damage. Mm-hmm. For him, doing a parking ticket is kind of a big deal, which sounds really awful. But I think it's important to acknowledge, because sometimes things that are easy for other people, you have done something good, because you've gone against everything your brain wanted you to do, which is shut it out.
It sounds like Ben is a lucky guy, like, to have someone like you to be that kind of empathetic and caring about it. I think we rely really heavily actually on our support network of people, and it's really difficult for people to live with someone who has ADHD. like, I completely acknowledge that, and I think, like, my parents would have been lucky to have known earlier that I had it, because I think I was a bit of a shit sometimes. Like, and they're going like, what, whoa, like, you've suddenly gone from 0 to 60 kind of thing with a lot of stuff. And like, even just, I was a massive exhibitionist in one sense as a teenager, a massive problem, and then on the other hand was like, you know, self-harming and kind of hiding away and like, you know, so there was so much to for them to understand and know that it was nothing to do with them at all, other than perhaps their genetic makeup. But yeah, I think you're amazing to look after them like that and to have that patience, because it's incredibly challenging.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's difficult to know how much to say on here, but it is really, sure. It is really difficult, because, yeah, but I think it's just trying to for me, his diagnosis was like, in comparison to dyslexia, I could try my very hardest to try and spell right or not miss words out in a document. And I can get there, but it will take me 5 times as long as anybody else. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just saying just do the parking tickets is saying to me, just spell that word right. I mean, I can't. I'm trying. Mm-hmm. I want to. But yeah, it's really not easy. But I think the work that you're doing, and as we begin to understand this more, it's going to become easier, because A, you don't feel so alone in it, and B, we begin to understand how to help it and to understand other people that we exist with.
Mm. Well, and I think also the looking at all the intersections and how that affects things. Like, I was very aware that, again, like, my whiteness protected me in so many spaces. Mm. And just the fact that I was sort of well-spoken. And in some of the... Mm. I went to mostly state school, but I did have a couple of experiences of prep school where you're literally, you know, your parents are paying for you to be there. No, they're not going to expel you or unless you do something really bad. Do you know what I mean? So I think it's also about looking at the different communities. Like, I mean, there's been several studies that have just completely ignored Black women, and various other kind of underrepresented groups, because of the sort of the idea that, and I'm quoting, this is not my words, but the sort of social chaos attached to those groups. And it's like, are you like, what are you talking about? Like, this is just another hugely racist part of the healthcare system that needs to be untangled. So I think, you know, obviously the incidence of ADHD is across the board, whatever your ethnicity, you know, whatever your background, it doesn't discriminate against on that sort of factor. No. And also looking at different socioeconomic backgrounds as well. Like, again, I was able to be like, I think I need to see a psychiatrist. But lots of people, there's huge stigma attached to that, or it's just the costs are completely prohibitive. So
it is
about awareness, spreading and all that kind of thing. But I think at the end of the day as well, like, the system is so broken. And I can say that my husband is an NHS employee, and it is, it's broken. So I think I'm just willing, like, the powers that be to kind of put through some changes. And I know that there are so many experts out there that have, like, the right idea and the blueprint for what it could be like. But yeah, so much work to be done.
Yeah, huge. And, you know, you're so early on this journey, really. Mm. And it's weird. I have seen it across Instagram, actually, loads of women of kind of our peer group get with recent diagnoses, and maybe that's no surprise because they've just done really, really well at kind of being very busy. And I don't know, I'm not going to do sweeping generalizations, but it's very interesting when it becomes suddenly very visible.
It's interesting. I don't know what it is about this time particularly, other than that we are more generally aware of mental health conditions as well, so we're talking more about stuff. But it is interesting that it's suddenly come. I mean, it is the last couple of years.
Yeah,
it's like an
even
epidemic.
The last year. Mm. Yeah, I don't know whether, trying to wonder if COVID gave us nowhere to hide with anything, really. And especially, again, this is from more of my personal experience, but if you're not going out and you are in your home and you are literally bouncing off the walls, and yeah, there's less opportunity to mask when you're with the same people all the time.
That's true. Well, I think on the one hand, for lots of people, it threw open their vulnerabilities and the kind of realities of what was going on. And then for people like me, I was like, oh, I feel really good at the moment because there were no challenges. Like, I didn't have to get anywhere on time. I didn't have to fill the car with petrol. I didn't have to remember even the shopping because I wasn't really going out. Like, and actually it was that allowed me to rest and understand how I needed to kind of manage my life. But yeah, on the other hand, I've got so many friends who went through lockdown just, you know, going out of their minds, and just the struggle every single day. Yeah. And, you know, whether it's like parenting or work, you know, remotely and having to self-motivate and stuff, there are so many challenges. So yeah, you're right that I think the pandemic has 100% opened up that awareness. And it's also given us space to speak about it as well, I suppose.
Yes. Yeah. And as you say, that unique thing of when we have gone back to the new normal, so overused, but how that begins to show up. Because we were just doing life, weren't we? You never thought that there could be a different way, a different shape of life. And I guess that was the transition. You go back and you go, hold up, I really can't do this anymore. I can't commute and, I need to find a way of working.
Completely. I was like making my life already smaller and smaller. So I'd stopped commuting to London. I'd been like, I'm going to go freelance. And then it was like, I'm not going to work for those titles anymore. I'll just keep it to these. And it just got smaller and smaller and smaller. And my psychiatrist pointed out that was all just a way of coping with it getting worse. Or, you know, more, not worse, I suppose, more profound. But I also, I should say as well, I read Earthed by Rebecca Schiller, which started, I was around her when she was writing it. It was not a book about neurodivergence, but she was diagnosed midway through the writing process. I mean, that book, it was like reading profound. What was going on in my brain. Yeah, but beautifully articulated. So I think that was also, that's a big moment. I think so many people have read that and gone, oh, that's my life, you know. So that was such a gift to all of us, I think.
Yes, it's a really beautiful book. Mm. I highly recommend that. It's, yeah, and that idea of getting to the thing that you think you wanted and it not feeling like that, and realising that the thing that was off was not your externals, it was trying to work out how to live with your neurodiverse brain, I suppose. Yeah. It's a really beautiful book. Mm. In closing, a couple of things. If this is ringing any bells for people, how do you go through the process of getting diagnosed?
So I know a lot of other people have said this as well, as the first thing, it's always your GP. It depends very much on your relationship with your GP as to how you broach that subject. So if you want to kind of get all of the information ahead of time so that you feel like you can really advocate for yourself, you know, list your history where you think it's crept up, you know, list the kind of symptoms and the way that you think it's affecting your everyday life, so that you just have as much information as possible. And, you know, if you can, email ahead of time, send links over and stuff so that all the information's there, so that you're not going in and going, I think I have ADHD, and then letting someone gaslight you into being like, well, I don't think that's an issue. So and then it's a case of looking at your local trust. Some trusts are, you know, have very short waiting times, so it could be fine. And then if not, then obviously your GP can refer you privately. You can find someone. The most important thing to me was that the psychiatrist had an NHS practice as well as a private practice, because it seems like there's quite a lot of people now offering ADHD assessments that maybe don't have that spectrum of experience in the field. And that the only way really to kind of ensure that there's a real specialism and understanding there, so that you don't get a false diagnosis, is that they've seen it all before. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And they haven't just seen the middle class white woman who has like cash to splash. I think that's really important. But yeah, I mean, join the communities online. If you're a black woman or non-binary person, then ADHD Babes is amazing. There's lots of writers like Rebecca sharing their experience. And I think it's just, you know, self-diagnosis is very tricky because we don't want to have people out there who think they have ADHD and actually something else is going on, like bipolar disorder or something. However, you know, if it's depending on the way that it's affecting your life, self-diagnosis is still valid. If you are noticing those challenges and you can get enough from the community of in terms of support and coping mechanisms and information, you know, that's your journey. I think it's just about the way that we then seek treatment and stuff is obviously different. So yeah, I would 100% go to your GP first and try and follow that route and see.
Yeah, because it is one of those things, if yeah, once you start reading stuff, it will either tick a load of boxes quite quickly. You know, I can't speak for everyone, but I think it wouldn't be a case. There'd be one or two things that relate. You're like, oh, wow, this has just described my whole existence in a way that I didn't even piece. I think for me with ADHD, it was the piecing together of what might otherwise seem quite disparate things into one place.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, it's not just that you had anxiety as a kid. It's that you don't like queuing. And no one likes queuing, like, but like that you
who
have,
that?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That you kind of have. I think also there's lots of traits that are, again, like 21st century womanhood.
Yes.
It's very difficult to sort of extrapolate that. But on the other hand, it's the frequency and the intensity that you experience those traits and how they affect the way that you live. So yeah, I mean, I think the more information that's out there, the more GPs and all healthcare professionals will be equipped to deal with it. But as I say, in terms of self-diagnosis, it's just that you don't want to miss something else, because, you know, there's lots of similarities with autism, with bipolar, and lots of other kind of personality disorders. So it's important to see somebody at some stage. Yeah.
That's great advice. Two more questions. Where can people find you? And is there anything particularly you want to shout about?
Well, I'm at Grace Timothy Writer on Instagram, or is it my ADHD on Instagram? The podcast will be launching in March and will be across all of your podcast providers. No, I think that's me at the moment. Yeah.
Well, that podcast isn't far off then. It's really soon. Have you enjoyed doing that?
Oh, I've loved it, because I don't want to say it's like therapy, because that's a bit of a disservice to psychiatrists everywhere, but
no.
The conversations, oh my gosh, so helpful, so interesting, and because I do struggle with books and things like that, it's that medium that really, really suits, I think, the way that we process information. So yeah, it's been amazing. It's been a complete gift. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, oh, how can this be work? Because this is really great.
Yeah.
I think podcasting is an amazing thing to do. But as you say, it's a big impact on your brain, actually. I always have to go and have a massive walk after doing podcasts, because my brain is so like overwhelmed by trying to take a lot of stuff in. We don't really have like intense one-on-one conversations very much in day-to-day life, do we?
No, that's so true. And I think, yeah, it's the frankness. And also, you know, people have cried and people have, you know, really struggled with whatever it was we're talking about. So I think on both sides, there's a real responsibility of like, well, my responsibility to make sure that person's all right at the end of it as well. And, you know, that we do both go off and have a walk, actually. But yes, but today is very much back to watching The Simpsons and making sandwiches.
I'm going to get blown away. And my last question, in the theme of the honesty of the podcast, if you could have an honest conversation with one person, who would it be and what would you say?
At this point in my processing of everything that's going on, I would really like to talk to some of the boys from my past. Not the lovely ones. There were lots of really lovely ones. I was very lucky. But some of the less lovely ones who, you know, took advantage and weren't very nice. And I think, looking at my ADHD, I allowed so much to happen and I ignored so many red flags. And I would like to just talk to them, because I'm sure they're all very nice people by now as well, but maybe not.
Yeah.
But yeah, I feel like that my only regrets are that I let some of those people take advantage of what was just a vulnerability that I wasn't really aware of. Yeah, that's who I'd like to go and have an honest chat with.
Well, would you get them all in a room?
There's too many, Clemmy.
Okay. Well, in a hall, stadium?
In a stadium. No, not really. I'm joking. There aren't really that many. But yeah, God, I don't know. I'd somewhere where I could maintain a healthy distance.
Yeah, okay. Great. Well, there you go. That's a great answer. Yeah, and also, God, that's a whole different thing, isn't it? Because they don't know who they are, probably, and what they're
100%.
Showing up with.
Yeah, and this is all teenagers, you know. This is like, I got married when I was 26, so everybody, it was sort of pre-20, I'd say. Although, do you know what? I'd also really like to talk to some of my employees from way back when to explain what happened. These people who put faith in me and thought like, oh, she sailed through the interview process and she's, you know, she can talk a good game. And then were like, why can't she do X, Y, Z. But I've also learned to completely let go of that because I've got to where I'm... Yeah. I didn't always want to be steered in the direction that it was taking me. However, I'm really happy with where I am.
There you go. So it's... Boom. There you go. That, what a way to end. We'll go out there. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Clemmy.
Oh, wow. That conversation with Grace has really, really been educational. I have to say, I'm only just beginning to learn about ADHD, but hadn't really given much thought to ADHD in women. And also about the bigger picture of neurodiversity and how the condition can have impact into your mental health and therefore about your overall experience of life. I feel really optimistic that these conversations are being had and that we are trying to get better understanding and that people will have the opportunity to show up in the world in a way that works for the way their mind works rather than having to put an undue amount of effort into appearing normal when, as we know, there is no such thing as normal. And I feel like that's a very trite bit of language that we often say, but the older I get, the more I realise what a laughable concept that is. So that's it. That's another episode of But Why Done. Thank you so much for listening. I'm very, very grateful to have you here. I am now off to actually do a bit of deep breathing. I love doing this for my job, but it's also an awful lot for my brain to process, especially when I'm talking about something like this, which has quite a lot of personal implications. So I'm going to go and, give myself a bit of time to try and be a bit more grounded and then cracking on with the rest of the day. So thank you so much for being here. Wishing you a lovely rest of your day and look forward to catching up with you next week. Okay, bye.